Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Vogue. We're okay. Mental episode, I would guess.
Anyway, but we are sign into this. I want to start with one of my. Someday I'm going to do it. But there's a line in a Lil Wayne song, and I fucking love Lil Wayne, where he just chimes in and he just goes, "Hey the motherfucker, hey ha, how you darn." And one day I'm just going to open the show like that, just as a heads up.
As you should. I feel like you just did. I feel like I'm just going to clip this. That's how it's going to start.
Just work Lil Wayne lyrics into my everyday life. Done.
As we all should. Well, welcome everybody to our show here. I don't know. I think I've again lost the plot, but that's fine. This is the Docusin. Special episode of your regular social scheduled program of interesting as fuck. Welcome. We are so excited to have you back with us again. We will be talking about our Docusin today. And of course, Elaine runs the show on these because she's our esteemed documentary, PhD. And we will, be chatting about Room 237. And if you joined us on our last episode, we talked a little bit about it, but I will, tell you the kind of gist. It has 90% Rotten Tomatoes, was released in 2013, runs about 102 minutes. Is a very interesting documentary to talk about, Elaine, take it away. You can, kind of give us a little bit. Oh, of course, spoiler alert. If you haven't watched it and want to watch it, stop now. But which I don't think we did that very well the last episodes, but whatever. Learn. But really, and really go watch it unless you want, spoilers. And there you go.
Awesome. Room 237. One of my favorite movies. Probably top 15. I'd say top 10, but Goodfellas and all the Godfather movies. Well, the first and the second.
There's a lot of those. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, definitely up there, like just one of the greatest movies ever made. I don't even do scary movies, but this one I could watch a million times. And Stanley Kubrick, who is just a brilliant director. He does such a good job with this one. If you haven't seen The Shining, go watch it. You don't have to have seen the movie to watch this.
I'm one of the people that have not watched The Shining. It's again about our topics about disagreeing with people. I disagree.
Get the fuck.
We're here. I can go. I need a refill anyway. But yeah, you don't, and I will caveat, you don't need to have seen The Shining to really, as long as you know the basic plot of the movie, and kind of heard about it, you know, even I think if you read the book, you can.
Oh, sure. You know, for sure.
Yeah. Right. For yeah. Sure. Like it's.
I think a lot of the. So Room 237 is about five conspiracy theories that fan conspiracy theories that are come out of The Shining. So I think a lot of these are very specific to Stanley Kubrick, not so much Stephen King. However, I agree. You don't have to have seen the movie. You don't have to. You can have read the book. But I do think some of the conspiracy theories are very tied specifically to Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
Those five conspiracy theories, I think, are weighted very differently. There are some where I'm like, oh boy, you're losing me on this one. And then others where I'm like, what? Like, you know, my mind was just kind of blown. They are Native American genocide, the Holocaust, the moon landing, minotaurs, and government mind control. Some of them, like I said, I subscribe to them is like, I don't subscribe to them. I stan some of them. Like, I love the idea that there's a conspiracy theory behind some of this. Others, I'm just like Linda and I are fans of conspiracy theories in the terms of like,
I love talking about them.
Reality. Yes. We love talking about them. We love finding the reason why someone might, why this might be a conspiracy theory. We don't actually buy into them, but, I also like same thing about like with cults with me, like I'm fascinated by them. I love learning about like the mindset of people that kind of get involved in stuff like that. Conspiracy theory is kind of same thing. And so you want to throw five like pretty solid conspiracy theories at me from a movie that is just absolutely fucking stellar, I'm in.
Do it.
So, and if you watched the movie, you know, if you watched the documentary, you know, it takes clips from the movie.
Like show their work.
Like, exactly. And like,
which is why you can follow it, which is why you can follow it. Right. Even if you haven't read, if you haven't read the book, watch the movie, you can follow it because essentially it's just a voiceover with the conspiracy theories and like showing the parts in the movie that correspond to those conspiracy theories, which is why I could follow it. In that sense,
I think so. For me, I'm going to throw this out there and then I have a question for you, Linda. I think the most compelling ones, meaning the ones that kind of have the most oomph and I don't want to use the word proof. That's not the right word. Supporting clips, maybe? What's the word I'm looking for? I don't know.
Okay.
Are the Native American genocide one and the moon landing one. I think those are the most substantiated in terms of like from the movie, not from actual like.
Yeah.
Being. But I want to know what was so twofold. What was your favorite conspiracy theory? And but separately, so separate these two. What was your favorite one? And then like, what was one where you were like, oh shit, that's fun. Like that's good. That's fucking crazy, but it's good. But then separately, which one do you think is kind of the most substantiated in terms of, yeah, I could actually see the link of that.
Yeah. So I see as the Holocaust one and the Native American genocide. And the reasons why I say that is because, and I, you know, I haven't watched a lot of Stanley Kubrick movies, but you know, his thing was always about, and I feel like it's always about reflecting the world in an art form that's different. Yeah. Like he's processing something in history. And I think, you know, genocides, you know, it's, you know, the whether it's the Holocaust or the Native American genocide, it, you know, it's not the same thing, but it's about hurting a massive amount of people, like one group hurting a mass, like a ton of people, you know, with no cause or purpose apart from right. Like some fucked up ideology
targeting right? them because of who they are
exactly. And I think that's kind of, you know, knowing the movie felt like the most, the two, they're not my favorite in the sense of they're the ones that I see the more plausibility.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And I don't see them as conspiracy theories. I see them more of as an analysis of the art form that Stan Lee did, because most of his movies, you're always sitting there going, what is he trying to tell me? What is he like, you're trying to decode, you know, what was going through his brain. And I think one of the best things about him was that he never really explained. So he let it be art. Right, he let it be art, and he never really kind of fundamentally went into that. And I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that he never went into it. Like, he was a director, and I think this is like a part of one of our earlier conversations that we had about how art is no longer done like it's been in the past. That it's like the art is the art, and it's how we analyze it and how we take it into the world with us. And I think knowing the movie, I think those are the two, you know, the ones that I like kind of took, and I went like, yeah, I can, you know, I see what the people are saying, and I can follow that through the movie. And obviously, like, you know, the characters, Jack Nicholson and his wife and the kid, are really, you know, like miniature versions of like the bigger group. So I think, yeah. I definitely see that. The one that I was like, that was out there was the moon landing. And the only reason why I say that is because of the guy at the end, you know, of the, and he goes, cause that one's the conspiracy theory. That's what I see as a conspiracy theory. Where he goes, you know, I'm, you know, being watched and my taxes are going to be audited next year. And I was like, all right, this feels a little bit like too self-important, buddy. Like, maybe that did happen. But that was the one that I was like a little way out there. And then the Minotaur one, I was also, what?
That one loses me.
Like, I'm sorry. There's a poster for 2 seconds and there's a maze and you're like, it's about a minotaur, and I'm like, that's not even the Greek mythology, like that's not even the minotaur like minotaur myth, like that's not what the Greek story is about the minotaur, right?
Yeah.
And that's, for me, that one's the one that lost me like completely. And then so, of course I'm sitting there going, what the fuck is Tom Cruise doing here?
I mean, why is Tom Cruise anywhere?
Well, I think we disagree on this one, but you know, like,
I love Tom Cruise. I had a birthday party when I was 4 called Tea with Tom because I was so obsessed with Tom Cruise.
I want the coconut cake. I want him to send me the coconut cake. Like that will be like Tom Cruise. Like, I mean, he's president. Yeah, of course. I mean, he jumped on a couch and that was fucked up. And
you're glib, Matt. You're glib.
Yeah. Of course.
Fuck off. both of them, by the way.
But I think that I was like sitting there going, so the what the fuck meter.
Yes.
Always shows up.
Questions, of course.
The what the fuck meter was for the moon landing one. Cause like half of me is like, what the fuck? Like to an, like, I don't think I can give the movie a what the fuck. Like me, okay. Rating, like the sure. Movie itself, I'm like, okay, cool. You're telling me this movie, like, but the moon landing one, I was like, you got a what the fuck 8 meter on me in there. I will also say I have a family member that has an Apollo. Like, he's like, we've never landed on the moon.
So what's funny about all of your hot takes on this is of all of those conspiracy theories, the most likely, and I'm not saying this because I subscribe to the fact that we didn't win, there has been talk about Stanley Kubrick staging the moon landing forever, and it is truly like the actual most substantiated one, or the one that's talked about the most, like, well,
did he ever talk about it?
So I think that's why people think that this movie was his, because he wasn't allowed to talk about it, right? Quote unquote. If this is what happened and they staged the movie thing,
yeah.
He wasn't allowed to talk about it. But this movie was his way of talking about it.
Huh.
Is what, and so the room, so room 237. So yeah. I'm going to go, here we go. I'm going, yeah. I'm gonna about to go off.
So, yeah.
And I have my, y'all can't see this, but I showed Linda before. I brought my red rum wine glass that I drink
red
wine out of all the time. I bought it at the Stanley, which is the hotel in Estes Park, Colorado, that right. the Overlook Hotel in The Shining is based off of.
Right.
I am not drinking red wine tonight. In fact, I poured myself a bourbon on the rocks because it is what Jack Torrance orders at the bar. From Lloyd, even though he is supposed to be sober. Lloyd, not real, by the way, in the movie. So right. I am drinking a Barter House Orphan Barrel on the rocks in honor of my boy Jack Torrance and our bartender Lloyd. I went to the Stanley Hotel and absolutely, I did two things. I ordered a bourbon on the rocks. And the Stanley Hotel, I'm going off the rails for a hot second because that's what we do here.
Do it. Off the rails.
The Stanley Hotel is also where Dumb and Dumber was filmed.
So really?
I took my sip of bourbon and I know I'm not the first person or the last person to do it. I turned around, I looked at the wall, and I said, we've landed on the moon! Because they still have
the moon
newspaper clipping. Yeah. Of landing on the moon, which also ties into our conspiracy theories here, right? So if you go to the Stanley Hotel, room 237 is actually room 217. And if you, it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it. Cause I love this movie so much. You walk in and you go to the desk and you see all of the old school, like skeleton keys. They still give you like a skeleton key for your room. Every single room. Is all the keys are facing the same way, except for one.
For one.
And it's room 217. So the room is actually 217. In the movie, it's room 237. And they talk about this in the conspiracy theory because they think that was the set location, 237, like the set room that he shot the landing in, right? Danny Torrance also wearing an Apollo 11 sweater.
All of
these things. So they think that like this was his way of not breaking any type of NDA or security clearance or whatever, faking the moon landing. But this was him saying like, guys, I faked the fucking moon landing.
Yeah.
And so to me, like, I love that one because it's something that like people talk about forever and will talk about forever. So that one's my favorite because.
Yeah.
It's lore, whether it's lore or whether it actually happened. Like,
I mean, you know, it could very well be that he directed it from NASA, right? Like when the moon landing was happening,
right?
It was like, this is how you set everything up. This is how it looks.
Right.
You know, right. It's very possible that he was directing it in some way, right? I think. What makes that conspiracy theory hold the test of time? Because essentially, like, you know, there's conspiracy theories that run around for a long time, but the moon landing one is one that's been like consistent. And like
the moon has a lot of fun conspiracy theories, like that it's hollow, that lizard people live in it, which David Bowie was a believer of, by the way.
Oh, poor David Bowie.
Maybe it was the Earth is hollow. Whatever it is. Like,
I like lizard people, whatever.
The lizard people.
Maybe we are the lizard people, and that's what he was saying.
We probably are.
but, you know, I think the concept is, and which tie it back to, we can all interpret the same thing. different ways. And I think that is what makes things interesting. And that's why we should always want not to like impose our opinion on people, but to say, hey, this is how I view this. And nobody was, you know, the way they were talking about this didn't hurt anybody. It was in a very respectful way. I'm just talking about this is how I view this piece of art and this is how I interpret it. And I think we all have either that duty or that responsibility or that privilege to do that. And I think, you know, I think that's the kind of the theme behind this podcast is you are worthy of having your opinion, you know, as long as you're kind and respectful about it. And that's how you become interesting is you become fluent and fluid into talking about how you view things. And I think we've lost the art of that. And I think in a lot of ways, like the documentaries that have been coming out lately don't have that anymore. And again, art is becoming boring. Like we are not doing, and it's only what Red Room. Room 237 is only 12 years old. It's not that, it's not, and the production value is really low. Like it's not like, you know, the ones that we've been watching, but like, it's really interesting to see, like, what is the latest documentary from 2024 that you've seen? Like, let's say 2023, like a couple years ago, that's really good on your list that you already have. Like, I don't, like, I feel like.
It's great. It's a great question.
Like, are we getting things like this? Like this?
Oh yeah.
This was a great documentary in how we interpret a piece of social commentary.
So it's a great question. And my husband and I talk about this all the time because, again, as I mentioned when we kind of introduced this, I love documentaries. It's technically my favorite genre of movies. He said this not even 2 days ago, and I do agree with him. Documentaries aren't documentaries anymore. They are, it is hard to go into a documentary and not find some type of bias, whether it's true crime and it's exploring who done it. There's usually like leading you to believe who did do it or who didn't do it. And like, unless we really know, like that's an opinion. And the production values are insane. And like, it makes it fun for all of us and it makes it really interesting, but I completely agree. This one, $5,000 budget. You can't do nothing with a $5,000 budget anymore.
Nothing.
Especially in terms of movies.
Yeah.
So it's rare to find a documentary. Actually, I think the next one I want to propose is similar, where it's like, it's just an incredible fucking story. There's no major production value, like, but don't worry, there's some on the list, and I'll actually name some right now. So there was recently one, probably 2022, but there's one about Bob Ross. And Bob Ross is a childhood.
That one was good. I've watched that one.
Really good. Three Identical Strangers might be like 2019.
Yeah, that's true. But, the Mr. Rogers one.
Oh, I haven't gone there yet. I can't.
Oh, you will be destroyed.
I know.
You will be destroyed.
I'm at it.
I watched the Mr. Rogers.
You be my neighbor.
Because there's a documentary and then the Tom Hanks movie.
Yeah, the documentary I'm pretty sure is called Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Yeah, and I watched it on the way to fucking Hawaii. Like, why the fuck?
Like, bad girl. Bad idea.
Why?
It's so bad.
Sobbing, like, as I'm landing with, like, the Pacific Ocean. I'm like, why? Why? What is wrong with you?
Yeah. But some of the other ones, this one I
like,
can't
I'm
wait
to cry
this
now.
One's a
little bit, like,
yeah, that's why I'm like, we have to stop talking about it, because a woman I was sitting next to on a long flight was watching it, and just I couldn't even hear it, just watching a tiny bit of what she was watching, I started crying. I was like, fuck this, I can't do this. This Is a Robbery is on the list. We will do that one big time. That's like a four-part series. It is about one of my favorite true crime cases from my favorite museum on the planet in Boston.
You've told me about this one. You've told me about this one, yeah.
Yes, it's about the biggest art heist in the U.S. at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. That one came out during COVID. Fucking unbelievable. The Thief Collector is on here. I just watched that. That one's brand fucking new. So there's some new ones, but it's
okay.
But
good.
It's really interesting to think about, like, this documentary, which you're saying is only 12 years old, before documentaries got really big, and now, like, even King of Kong that we watched,
yeah,
production value. Like, I would even argue The Imposter wasn't really a production value. It's just a fascinating story. Yeah. I can't imagine what The Imposter would look like today with the production value and the budgets that they're given with this kind of stuff.
And also the bias of it, because The Imposter,
exactly,
in a lot of ways, even though, like, you're sitting there wanting that, like, you're as a person creating, like, you're, I didn't feel in either King of Kong or The Imposter, because those are the ones where, like, you kind of have to lean one way or another, weren't doing that. They were like showing both sides in that sense and showing.
They were just telling a story.
They were just telling a story. And I agree.
Icarus, too, right? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Production value from that, even.
Yeah. But
no, there's definitely large. All right. So.
Okay. So redacted. That was a real time.
No. It's a fair point.
No, but it was like a question.
But even as you keep reading, like, the stats, I'm like, wow, we spent a lot of time between 2007 and 2012. But I do have to say, like, that's probably when I was really into documentaries. Again, I was, my two DVDs from Netflix, I wasn't watching movies. I was watching documentaries. I was having the two big things I loved doing. I loved renting documentaries. And I loved renting all of the Best Picture nominees from the Oscars. I would wait till that came out and I would rent all of those.
Yeah.
So that was my big thing. But yeah, we're definitely going to get into some, like, newer stuff. And the list that I'm just reading from right here was just all, like, right off the dome. If I need to start, like, actually going through and adding some of the things I've actually watched on Hulu and all this Netflix, all the streaming stuff. A lot of it's true crime. So, like, there's countless true crime documentaries out there right
now.
But
I think those are the times, right? Like, when Serial came out with the podcast, I think we went into this whole
exploded. I feel that's the one that was the catalyst documentary wise when it comes to production value. And, like, that to me is kind of where the table turned, where we're like, what?
But I think, again, it's how society was, like, shifting to more of a democratization of transparency.
Sure.
Because there's, like, I think our true crime quote unquote obsession, and I don't want to call it an obsession because I don't think that's what it is. The fascination between by like the general public and a person taking another person's life is a very philosophical thought process. What gives anyone the right to do that to another person? Number one.
Nothing.
Number two. Wait. I mean, number two is number two is, you know, how we can find that person. And three, what does justice mean?
Yeah.
Like, what does it mean? Like, are you thinking about an eye for an eye, life in prison? Just, like, what does that actually mean? And I think that all of that comes to the fact that we want more transparency in the justice system, and we want more transparency in real life. And I think that's why we're going into cults. I think we're trying, society is doing this thing, because now there's a proliferation of all these cult, you know, how are these cults and all, like, all these tips. And I think it's a way of telling itself that we want more transparency in systems of government.
Yep.
Because we can search things now. We can find out now. you know, given that we have access to information, you know, all this AI stuff, once we start asking questions and it's starting to get smarter, who's to say we can't get the answer from ChatGPT on was the moon landing fake? Right?
Right.
I think there's a lot of things that like we're getting there without realizing what we're doing. Like subconsciously, I think subconsciously, it's our quest for understanding our world and also transparency. And I think it comes back to Stanley Kubrick and how he viewed and how he decided to create this movie and then how these different people viewed it. And I would too bad, but you know, I would, now he's one of my people to have at dinner, because you know those dead people to have at dinner. Because I would be like, dude, what do your movies mean? What do your movies actually mean?
Because and I want to run through. Sorry, I totally cut you off there. But
no, you didn't.
I want to run through his movies, like some of the more famous ones, because I'm going to name six of them specifically. Yeah. We've already talked about The Shining. 2001, A Space Odyssey, for fuck's sake.
Which is the one that ties to the moon landing the most, obviously.
For sure. And also commentary on society. Every single one of these is a commentary on society. A Clockwork Orange. What? Like, you talk about a mind fuck and a half.
Yeah.
Like,
that
Jesus
one gave me
Christ.
A headache. That one gave me a headache.
Full Metal Jacket. Eyes Wide Shut. Weird shit. And one I think, Shining's number one for me, clearly, for Stanley Kubrick. Number two. Dr. Strangelove and How I Learned to Love the Bomb. I know I got the tagline wrong because it's super long, but Dr. Strangelove is actually a hilarious fucking movie about a very heavy topic, because that's like you hit the nail on the head. That's what he does. And I think you having him, you know, the dead or alive, who would you have at the
just
dinner
to
table?
Ask him that one question, and then he can fuck off if he wants. But like,
so good, such a good answer to that question. Because I'd be like, "What the fuck,
and you know, obviously, he was like a little bit like beyond like our time. But I think, you know, did he ever do? I'm looking this up right now. But did he ever like do any, you know? Any interviews to like talk about it, or did you just like was like, okay, I'm going to like, you know,
I'm not sure.
Leave it.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the little bit I know about him, it seemed like he was a pretty keep to himself person.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about him to answer that question. But
yeah.
I did almost just get another Lil Wayne quote in there when I said, what the fuck, though? So,
damn.
Throw that one in there.
Damn.
It's too much.
No. Two Lil Wayne quotes is not too much.
I love Lil Wayne. He's fucking nuts. But this was a fun one. I thought it would be fun for Halloween. But yeah, I'm looking back at our list. We've literally stayed in this time frame for a while, and we're going to stay here again for this last one. And then I promise I'll get us a new, like, high production one.
I'm going to throw this out there.
I
love it. Yeah.
I am really enjoying like springing the next documentary on you.
Yes, do it. And let's see if I've watched it. It's like, so.
Yeah. We're going to do Man on Wire.
Is it the one that walks?
It's the tightrope walker. Between the Twin Towers.
Yes.
It is the first movie to ever get a 100% Rotten Tomatoes rating. Ever. And still has it to this day. 100% rating.
Damn. All right.
And I remember saying, like, how could a movie about, like, how could a documentary about this have 100% rating? And so when we watched it, it was just spectacular. So I'm excited to go back and watch this one. This one was released in 2008. So I'll let you do the stats. You're the statistician when it comes to the documentary. I sprung it on you.
Oh no, it's so sad that I'm the statistician, but it is on Netflix.
It is on Netflix.
Yeah,
it's like on Netflix. I don't give a fuck.
Hey, whatever. It's do what you need. I drank coffee way too late, and so I can't
drink coffee past like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm a 90-year-old woman.
I did it at four.
Oh,
I drank coffee at four.
Get that? You got melatonin? Do you need me to drive you some melatonin?
Maybe no, but I took some magnesium, so maybe it'll help.
And
I just got a mindless fucking book that I'm gonna read, and I'm gonna be like,
yeah, perfect.
Out.
This is a good one.
But yeah, so it's an hour and 34 minutes documentary, and it is explores Philippe Petit's preparations for a historic walk across the high wire between New York's Twin Towers. Like you said, it has 100%, tomato rating, has not gone down ever. And we are going to be really excited about, you know, talking about this documentary. I have not watched it. I will watch it before, our next doc is in. But I really do want to also talk about the next episode. And I think, you know, we've been going on the fly, but we've talked about this a couple times, and talking about disagreements, how to have a conversation with somebody you disagree with, which I think we've lost the art of as much as we've lost the art of conversation. And I think we talked about this last episode a little bit, but, you know, how do you do that? And we know we'll give you, you know, experiences from how we've been doing it and how we've done it in the past, because we have, you know, jobs that put us in positions where we're talking to people we don't agree with, and how to do it in a professional but also a personal manner. And, you know, I'm really excited about that. As always, you know, our email lines are open. If we have a question, correct us. If we're wrong somewhere, let us know. And as always, Elaine, shut us down.
Stay interesting.